Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Urban school districts get a lot of the attention, but the nation's rural districts struggle as well in different ways and for different reasons. Fewer than a third of college-age residents of rural areas are enrolled in college. That's a statistic that reflects in part the dearth of things like advanced placement courses. Nearly half of rural districts in the U.S. offer AP courses, and that's compared to more than 97% of urban districts. We're talking about the challenges that rural school districts face in Ohio and across the country. Coming up, we're going to hear about a new collaboration between Harvard University and the Ohio Department of Education to address the shortfalls. Joining us now is Ohio State Associate Professor and researcher who focuses on rural education, Terry Bucci. Welcome back.
Thank you, Ann. I'm happy to be here.
Also by phone, Superintendent of Northern Local School District in rural Zanesville, Tom Perkins. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Happy to be here as well.
Tom Perkins, the struggles of rural districts, are they mostly bottom line issues that is related to revenue per student, or is there more to it?
Well, I think that everything has a price on it, but primarily we're talking about significant changes in recent years, I would say, dealing more with mental health and also, human capital shortage, which I heard you briefly introduce when you came on air. So I think that everything has a dollar amount to it when you talk about interventions that are needed, but I think certainly some things have changed in regional schools, rural schools, and urban schools alike as far as the needs of children.
What do you mean by the mental health piece of this?
Well, I think that we see a lot of more trauma from students. I know that the opioid and drug usage throughout the state is a concern, but in rural districts it seems to be something that has had a dramatic impact on what students come to school with.
With meaning what they're armed with? I mean, meaning
with the challenges that they're facing before they ever walk in our doors and the needs they have outside of the academics in order to be successful.
There are a lot of myths about rural districts still, Terry Bucci, that they're sort of these, Tom's just underscoring these changes that have happened pretty quickly. A lot of what we think of as urban problems are out in the rural areas.
That's right. I think part of the issue that both rural districts face and academics that work within those districts is really helping the public to understand that there are some similarities in the issues that come up with rural districts and urban districts. So when we think of like the opioid crisis or mental health and things like that, we oftentimes just go straight to the urban because that's a lot of times those of us who live near urban districts, that's what we think about. Mm-hmm. But these same issues are prevalent in rural districts. And the issue that compounds it is the lack of accessibility for resources for those districts.
Right. I mean, I think probably maybe 30 years ago when I was reporting on this, Tom Perkins, the problem was there weren't enough museums nearby. There wasn't access to enough role model professionals. There were too much isolation. I mean, the internet was, still kind of a twinkle in most people's eye. Transportation issues were a problem. And now the first thing you mention is mental health. And the resources are it's the same kind of problem. When you're isolated like that, you don't have enough psychologists, you don't have enough counselors, that kind of a thing?
That's exactly it. We just access to services. And now we're going to basic services for basic needs and we still have the issue with infrastructure for our technology, and the transportation is always going to be an issue because of the exorbitant cost.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're talking about services that we didn't have to provide years ago, and now, as you pointed out, access to those services for our students, in our community just isn't there.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. That's Tom Perkins. He's superintendent of Northern Local School District in rural Zanesville. Also with us, Terry Bucci. She's an Ohio State Associate Professor and researcher who focuses on rural education, which is the topic of our program today. The Ohio Department of Education is collaborating with Harvard University to address some of the issues that rural educators face these days. If you have a question or comment, if you came came from a rural district. Tell us what it was like if you live in a rural district. Tell us what you know about it and what some of the struggles you see. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Northern Local serves fewer than 2,300 students, so a lot of people think, well, that's as many students are in a high school in Toledo. Does it help that there are fewer students, or is that a further challenge, Tom Perkins?
Well, I think it depends on the situation, but the average school district size in the state of Ohio is 2,500. So, you know, we're right around the average for what you would expect in our school districts. Urbans, obviously, are larger. I think it goes back to the resources available because of the pure size of a district. But, you know, I think that each have their unique challenges. Geography probably plays a bigger challenge for us in a rural district because of that access that we've talked about on a variety of issues.
Geography, so internet's one big thing. I mean, it's something that most people take for granted, but it's still a struggle in some places, right?
Oh, absolutely. We'd still struggle as our technology advances and expectations of what students go to college, if that is the path they take, what they're expected to have experience doing, we struggle to provide that for our students. And although we've been innovative in trying to get that to them, when you're so spread out over miles, and I don't think that unless you're in a rural district, you understand we have districts that are 500 square miles. And trying to provide a regional place for students and families to come to learn those skills is difficult.
And we know, Tom was commenting on, we know that it takes a community, it takes a group of people in a regional area to work together to best serve the students in that regional area. And community plays a large part of that. So there's the local community, there's the teachers and the school community, district community. I think the larger educational community has a responsibility as well to see how we can best work with these communities to best serve their students. We know that students perform better when they are engaged not only in the academic world during the school day, but also after school. And as Tom pointed out, the transportation is a problem for that. So you have parents who live miles and miles away from the school who might want their students to do some things after school, but just physically can't get there to pick them up. So then that puts this taxing kind of fiscal responsibility on the district, who's already stretched, to provide that kind of transportation for what we know works best with students, which is some kind of community engagement and experiences for their own intellectual development.
What about Northern Local's wealth? How do you measure the wealth? Is it the free lunch programs, that kind of a thing still?
Well, it is based now on evaluation of the value of property throughout the district. So that determines the state share of school funding. That's the formula that they have currently. But it's interesting to point out that the state hasn't funded above 50% since 2009. So we haven't invested the money, you know, to address the new issues in education at this time. And certainly that's what we'd be advocating for with this new budget coming up.
What about recruiting teachers, Tom Perkins? What's that like? Do you tend to find, as I did, you know, 30 years ago, that a lot of them come from the districts where they teach, or do you have to recruit from outside?
Well, I think that, you know, some of the same issues you talked about from 30 years ago we still face today, which would be offering AP courses, trying to recruit high-quality teachers to our rural areas where industry and other work has dissolved over the years is certainly challenging. Primarily, our staff are graduates. For instance, in my district, we have less than a 3% turnover rate, and I would say that 85% of my staff are ones that have grown up here and lived here. So getting those outside experiences are sometimes challenging for us as well, bringing people into a community. But once we get them here, they don't leave. So we do offer things for them that they must enjoy.
So the 3% turnover, that's good, right?
That is good. But there, I don't know, Tom, if you can speak to this with respect to your district in particular, but substitute teachers are also concern.
Hard to come by.
Hard to come by, especially now in the state of Ohio. So
why is that especially now?
Well, substitutes don't get paid a lot for one reason.
Like 100 a day or something like that.
Yeah, it's about that. And then it's just there are conflicting aspects to having a substitute come into a classroom. So we want teachers to be in the classroom. We know they're the highest indicator of student success in the classroom. But they also need to work on their craft. And they're sick sometimes, so they're not going to be in their classroom. So when you have a lack of substitutes, that day is almost lost on the students, unless we prepare for it heavily. And a lot of districts are doing a really great job on preparing their students for when their teachers aren't in the building. Oftentimes in smaller districts, the students are absorbed into other classrooms mm-hmm. simply because they can't find substitutes. And that does have an effect on the professional development opportunities for a building or a district. So,
yeah. Tom Perkins, two things. I want to talk about the substitute issue, but I also want to talk about the advanced placement. Now, there's a debate over the virtues of advanced placement anyways, but the fact of the matter, I know kids who've gotten a whole first year of college under their belt because of their access to universities, the internet, and advanced placement. It helps them pay for school is the bottom line. And what's the advanced placement situation at Northern Local?
Well, like most of our rural districts, we have a limited number of advanced placement courses. And the thing about advanced placement is you take the course, you don't automatically get the credit. You have to score at a certain level, three or above,
right,
on an exam to get that credit. So what we've done as a consortium, 27 of our rural districts did, got a 21st century grant and increased our college credit plus courses. And so they also receive credit for those, but they receive credit by taking the course, not by taking an exam necessarily.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, just for an example, last year I think that we saved our students $56,000 in cost to go to college. Again, the district takes on that responsibility, but the idea was to expose students that maybe wouldn't have been exposed to a college-level course, you know, prior to their enrollment in college.
Do you think it makes a difference to be exposed to those college-level courses?
I think that it allows our students to make an informed decision on whether that's a pathway that they decide they want to take. Prior to that, in years past, a kid decided to try college or not, and unfortunately for them and their parents, they may be, you know, $40,000 in debt before they decide college isn't for them.
Mm-hmm.
So we think that this offers that.
And then what about the substitute issue that Terry Bucci brought up?
Everything that she said, I can agree with. Now, we are fortunate here. We've had to do some things creatively by encouraging retirees to come back, paying more money, which, again, straps you financially.
Right.
But we have a shortage just like anyone else and have contingency plans to address that. But it's definitely when you have people going to, you know, they got college debt, the money that we pay for a substitute doesn't pay what they need to have in order to survive.
Terry Bucci also mentioned the fact that you have to have people advocating for a school district, maybe even from outside of the district, people, community people. Do you feel like Ohio Northern has any examples of that and how that's helped?
Well, I think that we're only 36 miles east of Columbus, so mm-hmm. we have access to legislators and others that are more involved in the decision-making process. So I think that as far as partnership goes, we're unique for a rural school district. We have that. And we also have the organization of CHORUS that advocates for us as a group.
And you said you're part of the 27 district consortium?
It was part of an OAC, Ohio Appalachia Collaborative, that
okay.
we did to write a grant for that 21st, the straight A grant. And so it ended up being $15 million to facilitate the College Credit Plus.
You know, if I talk to an urban superintendent, a big thing for them is going to be security. They spend millions, you know, just take any, you know, Toledo, Columbus, a year on security issues. For you, conversely, it has tends to have a lot more to do with transportation. But I'm wondering, given the day and age that we live in, has security taken on a bigger piece of your spending?
Well, I would say that it has, although we've always kind of focused on security. Certainly with the recent year events, we've upped that. But to put in perspective, us versus an urban, it takes an average of 45 minutes for law enforcement to respond to an issue in my school. So think about that.
Just to show up?
To show up.
Wow.
So, I mean, potentially if they're on the other end of the county, because we have limited sheriffs,
right,
and we don't have the town. We have a couple town police in some of our smaller elementaries. But so when you talk about security, that's significant. And so being able to have a contingency plan in place, what happens if an event happens here, is unique from an urban. So although you know, certainly it's increased our cost. That's one that people can swallow. You know, you can spend on security and no one has any problem with that. It's the other things that people struggle with.
Hmm. Well, Tom Perkins, I want to thank you for joining us. I really appreciate your time today.
I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you as well, and thank you for addressing this topic.
You bet. Tom Perkins, he's superintendent of Northern Local Schools. It's in rural Zanesville, about, as he said, about 36 miles southeast of Columbus. We're going to continue our conversation. We want to hear from our listeners. Did you grow up in a rural school? Do you have kids in a rural school today? Give us a call. Tell us what you think about how rural education works in Ohio. There's a collaboration, a new collaboration between the Ohio Department of Education and Harvard University to identify the issues that rural schools struggle with and to come up with some solutions. We'll talk about that more later on in the program. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Rural school districts struggle with different challenges than their urban and suburban counterparts. Transportation, advanced placement classes, access to the internet, all are challenges that require spending money that the districts often lack. Still with us is OSU associate professor and researcher who focuses on rural education, Terry Bucci. Ellen Giovinazzo is a third grade teacher in the James A. Garfield Local School District in rural Northeast Ohio. She joins us by phone. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you, Ann.
Ellen, you've been teaching in rural districts for 27 years. Mm-hmm. How have you seen the challenges change over time or not?
Well, definitely we have seen an increase in what we call traumatized households. These are households where, you know, there's unemployment, there might be substance abuse, something that has changed the priorities of these households. They are not necessarily putting education as a top priority.
And you're at the lower level. You know, we just talked to the mm-hmm. superintendent from Northern Local, and we focused a lot on, you know, the secondary issues. Mm-hmm. Advanced placement, internet access. What are the issues that you think affect rural students in the lower grade levels?
Okay. Well, you know, students in the lower levels are far more dependent upon their parents to get them to school. When they're coming from households that are under a great deal of stress, they might not arrive able to get their needs so met in a socially acceptable manner. We've had kindergartners who have been violent in school. You know, this is unexpected behavior at this point in a rural district, but it's a growing problem. We have students who are absent more often. If they miss the bus, there's not transportation to bring them to school. Again, that transportation key. So, you know, we as educators are trying to get our students to school, get their needs met, but there's a great deal more unpredictable.
You know, I'm wondering, you know, Terry Bucci, you know, we know we're chronic absenteeism is a problem in rural districts. Is it tend to be more in these lower grades where the kids are so dependent on their parents?
I would say so. It depends on the home life. So if they have vehicles and but absolutely the younger kids are more dependent on their parents. They're more dependent on their parents for multiple reasons. You know, for their
basic needs.
Right. You
yeah.
know. They're also dependent on them because of all of this childhood trauma that's coming in, because of the cyclical nature of residents of rural areas. So typically families that are in rural areas, as Tom mentioned too earlier, they'll stay in those mm-hmm. rural areas for generations. They'll stay. And so those issues that come up are prevalent in these rural elementary schools. And so it's up to teachers then, like Ellen and some other great teachers that know that they're serving the whole child, not just their educational advances, and realize that it's falling on them. And so they're caring people. So they want to help with both the – I've had teachers that bring peanut butter and jelly and bread to school.
Right.
So that if they see that a student is being despondent, they can say, hey, why don't you go make yourself a sandwich? Or why don't you go grab an apple? And because they know that they can't teach students mathematics if they're thirsty and hungry or trying to figure out what's happening at home.
Right. Ellen Giovinazzo, that's the experience I've seen in a lot of districts where the teachers are caring for the whole child.
Absolutely. And, you know, we have 33 to 39% of our students are on free and reduced lunch, and yet our district is struggling to keep a staffed cafeteria because of the cost. Teachers provide snacks. Our counselors send snack packs home with students because often they are going home and not having full meals at home. Their school meal is their main meal. So the problem of hunger is a big one for us.
I want to turn to a caller now. Patty in Galloway, you're on the air. Hi, Patty.
Hi. I just want to speak to the positive aspect of having my children at Northern Local Schools. Mm-hmm. I have a daughter who graduated from there and another daughter who went through junior high there before we moved. My daughter who graduated from there was well prepared for her college education. Graduated from Ohio Dominican and now works with them, has a job there with them. Mm-hmm. But when my daughter who graduated from there was young, she had major medical issues. And I think the benefit of growing up in that school district was they knew who she was. She wasn't lost in a large urban school system just as a number. They knew who she was. They worked with us. They worked with her to ensure that she would succeed through school. She had a lot of absentee as a child because of major surgeries that she had, those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. But they assured her success by working with us as a family to make sure that she didn't miss too many assignments, those kinds of things.
So that's kind of the pros and cons. I mean, there's having a smaller district, people know who you are. Terry Bucci, that's kind of sort of what we think about when we think about a smaller rural district, that everybody knows everybody, and that's a good thing.
That's a great thing. And I appreciate, Patty, you bringing up some of these positive issues, because this idea of community connection to the districts is very strong in rural districts. And like Patty said, everyone knows everyone. For the most part. Mm-hmm. So we know when issues come up. As an example, recently in Clear Fork District, we had a student who passed away with cancer. The whole district has rallied around that student's family. They had since he was diagnosed. And so those kinds of things, while those can happen in urban districts, there's a much more personal connection to these students, to their families, to the needs of the students that are coming through their districts, that the community really steps up. They step up and they step in and they help out.
You know, Ellen Giovinazzo, you're a third grade teacher, James A. Garfield Local School District. Now, it says you've been teaching in rural districts for 27 years. Has it all been at James A. Garfield?
No. Yeah. I taught for 10 years at Ledgemont Local School District in Geauga County.
Okay.
In that school district, I was the only kindergarten teacher for 60 students in a year. So I had two classes and still 30 kindergarten students in a class. That district is no longer a separate district. It has been consolidated with another district in Geauga County because they could not keep a high school. The students were essentially going elsewhere. There were not enough of them to have the class offerings that other districts had, so students went away, and eventually the district. So
What is the impact, Terry Bucci, do we know, of having the consolidation of schools and students, many of whom are even farther from their home?
It's
an efficiency thing.
It really is the best
way to educate?
It's an innovative and creative way to solve a complex problem. So once you consolidate schools, then, like you said, the geographic area becomes even larger, and then some of those complexities come into it. But to provide the services that we know that students and teachers and administrators and communities need, sometimes we have to do this consolidation. And I think it's a really innovative strategy to solve mm-hmm. some of these problems. I think Ellen raises another issue, which is our support for teachers mm-hmm. in rural districts. So rural district teachers are almost on an island. As Ellen said, you know, she was the only kindergarten teacher in an entire
No one
district.
To even talk with and
right.
share your
Absolutely.
That's what happened
that's
today
a huge
stories.
Problem. Yeah. So not having other teachers who teach second grade or third grade or whatever to be able to bounce some ideas off of. Teaching is a complex profession. I think people think sometimes that because they went to school for 12 years that they know what teaching is about.
I can't even imagine.
And it's just, it's quite complex. Complex. And now that you're bringing in social emotional needs, fiscal responsibilities, teachers need support. And one of the ways that we can support them is providing professional development. But that, too, when you're talking about rural districts, that creates some concerns, because how do we get these teachers to professional development?
Mm-hmm.
One of the best ways is to bring professional development to them mm-hmm. and to supplement it with internet and online coaching and accessibility. Again, those can be problematic in rural areas because they might have technology in the school, but even teachers might not have it at home. So just because of where they live.
Yeah, Ellen Giovinazzo, I mean, did you ever just want to give up on the rural career trajectory and hit a rich suburban district?
Well, yeah, it's been a temptation, I'll have to say, over the years. But I have also really enjoyed the rural district for the support that we had from the community. And when we are dealing with students who come from some of these traumatized households, the community supports can be wonderful. So, you know, they don't get lost. What we find we have a shortage of, though, is maybe some more professional help for these students because they're isolated and there's no one to take them to counseling. So in our district, we've brought in, health counselors, mental health counselors from an outside organization and given them office hours just so they can meet with some of our students. And so we've had to find creative ways to bring help to our students.
What about contact with parents in a rural district? As a teacher, what's that like? I mean, you're always going to have your star parents, the ones that are the room parents mm-hmm. and all that kind of stuff, but...
Well, and I think it's similar to in any district.
Mm-hmm.
You have parents that you need to hear from more and you need to contact more often, and it just seems to go unacknowledged. And so, you know, it's a constant source of frustration for teachers, but it's part of the job.
Mm-hmm. Terry Bucci, do we know if there's an increase or is it the relationship between parents and teachers is exacerbated by a lot of the same things that rural districts struggle with, transportation issues?
All of those. So yeah. Access to communications, whether it's internet, phone
right.
transportation, all of those are very prevalent in these large, expansive rural
yeah.
districts.
And Ellen Giovinazzo, we've been talking about technology, internet mm-hmm. access a lot in terms of older students, but the expectations for younger students are greater than ever as well, right?
Oh, yes. And a few years ago, we had an initiative in my district to create web pages, and teachers were creating web pages for students to be able to access information for the classroom and parents as well
mm-hmm.
and, you know, review materials and so forth. And we found that it was so underutilized that because nobody had internet service that it just didn't go well. So it's been dropped at this time. We do a lot of our communication through cell phone, through the Remind app, but we haven't found that as a tool for at-home learning, it's consistent enough.
Yeah, Terry Bucci, how big of a problem is this internet accessing as we take it so much for granted and it's become such an integral part of so many people's lives in the bigger cities and in the suburbs? What in the world's going to happen?
So it's exasperated by the fact that our state assessments now are also on online. So students who come from districts who don't have a lot of experiences with technology, even though some of the rural districts have what's called one-to-one, so they'll have one laptop, one computer for each student.
But if you don't have internet.
But if you don't have internet to kind of play, I mean, we know students learn through play, and that includes through playing with like substantive ideas, concepts. But if they don't have time to play with these things at home and they just have time to work on them in the schools, it puts them at a great disadvantage when it comes to state testing as well.
Yeah. You agree, Ellen Giovinazzo?
Well, I agree. And the first year that we gave the online test, we saw a huge drop. It was difficult as a teacher, as a third grader, to sit in a classroom and see their frustration with just dealing with the format of the test. And it was nothing that we could really prepare them for because we just didn't have the technology.
Terry?
So one of the solutions, and it's really a Band-Aid, is to teach the students how to use the technology in school. When you're teaching them how to use technology, it's not necessarily teaching them the concepts that they're going to be tested on the test. So you're teaching them how to use the program.
Just so they can take the test.
Just so they can take the test. Mm-hmm. Instead of really, like, there are some great technology, like, innovations that you can use to learn concepts. But that's not what the time has to be spent on, because they have to be able to take this test on these computers. And so you lose instructional time as well.
And I'm wondering how much, again, all of this translates into success at the college level then.
We assume at Ohio State that our students are coming in proficient in the use of technology. Mm-hmm. We do have, as well, I'm sure, as most universities have opportunities for students to hone in on their technological skills. But there is, you're starting off at a disadvantage.
If you've been playing on the computer since you were 4 or 5 years old at whatever limits your parents set, blah, 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 versus getting in and having access to the internet not until you're 17 or 18 years old, it's a big difference.
That's right. It's like learning how to play basketball when you're a senior and playing against other people who've been playing since, club ball in elementary school. Huh?
And as with non-readers, students who don't have technological literacy are more likely to just step to the background. They just won't go to Ohio State. They won't go to their local university. So the number is not even counted.
And I think that creates a space then for higher education to be able to connect with these folks. We know that students can be successful if they have the supports that they need to be successful. So the rural districts are doing their best to provide those supports. We need to do a better job too in academia, I think.
And welcoming them
and serving them and coming to their districts and saying, yes, you can be successful at Ohio State or some of the other universities in the state. They need to see us. Some of the people who are at Ohio State know that we're not these scary people that live somewhere else in these big cities and see, we're real people just like they are. They can take these CCP classes or AP classes and really be successful. And that's going to help them to be successful when they go on.
There has been a problem, and I know that OSU is trying to address it, that even kids who are growing up in the shadow of Ohio State University, literally, have never been on campus. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to work with that. And there's lots of different programs. But what about that being removed from things like Ohio State? I mean, it's one thing to come to Columbus. I'm thinking, Ellen Giovinazzo, just about being exposed to a college campus.
Well, and my district is in northeastern Portage County, midway between Akron, Cleveland, and Youngstown. Mm-hmm. And we have students who really have not been far out of our own town of Garrettsville. And we try to get them to field trips and so forth, to Kent State, to Cleveland State, mm-hmm. and, you know, expose them. But it's really... It falls upon the district, and funding for field trips is limited.
Well, Ellen Giovinazzo, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate your insights.
Oh, thank you very much for giving me a chance to speak. Thank you.
Ellen Giovinazzo is a third grade teacher in the James A. Garfield Local School District in rural Northeast Ohio. Still with us, Terry Bucci. She's an Ohio State Associate Professor and researcher who focuses on rural education. Coming up, we're going to hear about a collaboration between the Ohio Department of Education and Harvard University to address a lot of the challenges we've been talking about today. So if you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Rural schools face myriad challenges, such as lack of internet access, a dearth of advanced coursework, and other amenities geared toward college readiness. Graduation rates in rural districts across the country are higher than the national average, but students from rural districts are less likely to graduate from college. The Ohio Department of Education has partnered with Harvard University to address these challenges. Still with us is OSU Associate Professor and Rural Education Researcher Terry Bucci. Heather Boughton is Director for the Office of Research, Evaluation, and Advanced Analytics in the Ohio Department of Education. She joins us now. Welcome to the show, Heather Boughton.
Thank you very much. Good morning. I'm happy to be here.
How did this project with Harvard come about?
So we started talking with Harvard about their Proving Ground program about 2 years ago, actually, and started working with them on developing a program that would work for the state of Ohio. About a year ago, we had our first two districts in Ohio join the Proving Ground program. And we feel very positive about the work that's been going on in those two districts. From the very beginning, we had a lot of conversations with Harvard about the particular challenges that our rural districts face, and very early on started brainstorming how we could get them involved in this program as well. And so Harvard has been really great partners with us in brainstorming solutions that will help support our rural districts. And so it was also about a year ago that they started putting together some ideas about how a rural network could work.
The Harvard Project will rely on data-driven solutions for rural schools. What kind of data are you looking at?
That's a great question. So our focus initially in this first year of the network is around chronic absenteeism. So a lot of the data is going to be around student enrollment, student attendance, and they'll be looking at – they'll certainly be looking at some outcomes data as well. And so part of the power of this work is understanding how to reduce chronic absenteeism and looking at attendance data. But part of the power of this work is also helping to better understand the relationship between absenteeism and other important things going on in students' lives. So we want to look at some outcome data as well.
And outcome data, in other words, once responses to this are put in place, then you're looking to see what's working and what's not.
That's right. So we will be looking, and by we, I should be clear that Harvard will be looking to see if the interventions and strategies and solutions that districts are designing, if they are actually reducing chronic absenteeism. That's first and foremost what they'll be looking at. But we can also sort of reaffirm the relationship between absenteeism and other outcomes. So we know, for example, that absenteeism in kindergarten affects or is related to third grade outcomes on reading assessments.
Which is the big year for reading.
Yes. And we know that absenteeism affects graduation rates and other factors in students' lives that are really important. So the wonderful thing about addressing absenteeism is that it is a wonderful thing to know that students are going to be in the classroom benefiting from the opportunities their districts are providing to them. That in and of itself is a worthy goal. But we also know that absenteeism has a really profound effect on other things as well.
It's a worthy goal. Is it an achievable goal?
Certainly. We know.
Because of the absenteeism is there, it's complicated.
Oh, absolutely. And we know that there are always going to be things going on in students' lives that will mean that they are going to miss school from time to time. We heard from someone earlier whose child had some medical issues that were challenging. And it was really wonderful to hear about how the school district supported that family. So we know that that will always be the case. But we also know that as districts start to kind of dig into the data and better understand the particular challenges that their students are facing, they can design solutions. Our districts are doing it. So our two districts that have been participating over the last year.
Which one are those, by the way?
Maple Heights and Canton City.
Okay.
And so they have gone through this process of looking more closely at their data, having really, thoughtful discussion about what the challenges are and how they can bring resources to bear on those challenges. And they're seeing positive results. So it is an issue that districts can address.
This is a $10 million collaboration,
That's
right?
That's correct.
What's the $10 million being spent on?
So it is a $10 million collaboration. We are not the only state involved in this. The state of New York is the other partner state in this. And roughly $5 million will go to each state. The $5 million will cover participation for up to 30 rural districts in Ohio and up to 30 rural districts in New York. And that addresses the costs of the data analyses, the site visits. And so this is not – while the data analysis part of this is really exciting, one thing I love about the Proving Ground program is that they are very hands-on and offer a lot of consistent support to districts throughout this entire process. So they come – they will come to Ohio multiple times throughout the year to work with the district partners, help them think through and understand the data, help them go through root cause analyses, think about the strengths that their district can bring to bear upon this particular issue, help them develop the interventions that they'd like to test out. And then Harvard will carry out the data analyses to kind of actually test those solutions.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking with Heather Boughton. She's director for the Office of Research, Evaluation, and Advanced Analytics at the Ohio Department of Education. And she's working with Harvard researchers on this program to address the chronic problems of rural school districts. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Also with us is Terry Bucci. She's an Ohio State Associate Professor and researcher who focuses on rural education. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Could we take the issue of chronic absenteeism, and can you give me an example of how this has played out, how they've looked at they've analyzed the data, they've looked at the root causes, and they've addressed it, and what's happened?
Sure.
Or what you hope.
What we hope will happen. Certainly. So as I said, a starting point for this program is to start looking at the data and better understanding who are the students within a particular district who are sort of facing this challenge of getting to school. And sometimes there are surprises in that data. You may find that your assumptions about who is not attending or where the problem lies may not actually be the case. And so as one example, I know of one particular district who is not part of this program, but who was looking at their absenteeism data, recognized that they had a particular challenge among second graders. And that knowing that piece of information really helps them start to think through, okay, what's going on at this particular grade level? Let's look at the schools involved and let's figure out what's going on here so we can address it quickly. For some of our current partner districts, They have focused some of the, based on their data analyses and the discussions that they were having as a team, they have been focusing a lot of their efforts around communication. And so communicating the importance of attendance to families and communicating with families about the times when their children are not there in school. And so one of our districts was really interested in being able to provide information quickly to parents about, you know, your child did not attend school today, and this is an important issue for you to think through. And they thought, well, perhaps we should have our teachers call or some of our staff persons call and give that personal touch to the phone call versus a robocall. And so Harvard was able to develop an experiment, essentially. What will work better, a personal phone call to every student who's absent or a robocall? And what they found was that, contrary to what everyone expected, was that the robocall was more effective.
How did they measure that? How did they figure that out?
So they determined sort of which students would receive a personal phone call and which families would receive a personal phone call and which families would receive a robocall. And they essentially evaluated that student's attendance after that call.
After that, okay.
Yeah. And so then they were able to also sort of adjust this experiment based on what time should the call happen, in the morning or in the evening, what's going to be more effective at reaching families and communicating information. And found that evening phone calls through a robocall, still using the principal's voice so that it's a little bit personal, were more effective because those happened more consistently. Those definitely happened. The school day, the craziness of the school day did not interfere with anyone's ability to make that phone call. And so that's and over time they started to see reduced rates of absenteeism just based on that intervention alone.
Yeah, I'm kind of relieved the robocall work because Terry Bucci, I started to think, well, that's more for the teacher to do now.
And it really is.
I was thinking, once again, the very skimpy resources, right?
Right. Yeah. So putting on, I mean, it's great. The teacher needs to have a great relationship with both their students and their parents or guardians. But yeah, just putting one more thing on them is.
So I was kind of like breathed a sigh of relief on
right.
that score. How much is it? Is there a sense that a lot of this stuff is going to cost money, is going to require additional resources? Because that's what the lack of resources is what leads to a lot of these issues. And it's not just hard, cold cash. It's access to the internet, that kind of a thing.
So here's – I would say two things to that. One is that it's not necessarily the case that it's going to cost more resources. So last year I had the privilege of sitting in on some of the district's conversations about what they were going to do and just listening, which was a wonderful experience to hear how – to just understand their perspective on the complexity of this issue. And what I appreciated about that was that it was not a discussion about just adding on new things, but it was if we feel like we need to engage our parents in a different way, what are the things that exist right now that we can build on? What are the strengths that we already know we have that we can build upon and sort of use to address perhaps even multiple issues? And so part of the discussion is around sort of making effective use of what is already in place rather than just simply adding on things. Part of the discussion also is around what are we doing that is not having the effect that we thought it would, and we can stop doing that and save some resources there. Mm-hmm. The robocall example is a good example of where that was the cheaper solution.
Yeah.
So there they were able to save some resources and reduce absenteeism.
I think another thing – so $10 million sounds like a lot of
money.
Doesn't
sound like a lot to me.
Well, when you're thinking,
a drop in the bucket.
So in a rural district, you're talking about transportation, things like that. It seems like a lot of money. But we have to front load the money on these issues. So we have to front load. We have to find out what the issues are, which is what Heather's talking about, so that we can then address that problem. So I'm a mathematician, so we need to know the problem first. Mm-hmm. So we do some deep dive into what the evidence is, and then once we know that, we can design unique situations and solutions for particular districts, working with the resources and community that they have available to them.
Terry Bucci, I want to thank you for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Terry Bucci, an Ohio State Associate Professor and researcher. She focuses her research on rural education. And also Heather Boughton, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Heather Boughton is Director for the Office of Research Evaluation and Advanced Analytics at the Ohio Department of Education. It has embarked on a collaboration with Harvard University to identify the issues that rural districts struggle with and to help them find solutions. Thanks for listening today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.